Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get lead stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Sandy Leon Best, host of Political Analysis. Welcome to the 21st century, where the corporate propaganda machine works 24-7 to manufacture your reality. Every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Political Analysis challenges the corporate narrative with independent news, analysis, and passionate conversations on the most critical issues of our time. Don't let the corporate echo machine become your truth. Tune in live to Political Analysis or visit the archives at prn.fm. If you like the show, rate us in iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Hello, this is Richard Martin to remind you that I'll be looking out for you on Mondays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time to give you the latest from the financial world and to let you know just how bad things are getting. I'll be telling you things you'll never get to hear in the mainstream media. So join me here on The Wake Up Call. You can listen to the show at any time from the archives, and if you like the show, rate us on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support. PRN.FM, bringing you new shows and fresh ideas every day. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
All the streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on the zombie streets, and the sirens make an eerie sound around me.
Hi, everybody, from a nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Back with you again on Sunday, October the 6th, 2013. How did we ever get this far anyway? I don't know. Yes, Abby Martin is standing by. I have to do a couple things first. We want to create and hold a very big space for this this incredible journalist, this incredibly talented, gifted woman to speak her mind tonight. Got a couple things I got to do before that. We will be rolling without commercial interruption tonight, and we will have two very good songs. One was picked by Abby herself. But let's start with this. I saw an amazing video just yesterday, which came off of YouTube. It's called A Green Road. Chernobyl heart, which is a medical term now, Chernobyl heart is now showing up as Tokyo heart, restrictive cardiomyopathy. It's affecting children. It features the wonderful Chris Busby, a nuclear scientist specializing in health effects due to radiation, who has been a stalwart with us. And I watched that video, and that pretty much cured me of a week of an endless cascade of Three Stooges, worsening, dog ate my homework calamities, telling us that Fukushima is not only out of control, that whatever control was there is disappearing very quickly. And I wrote this, okay, stop everything. If you like, I am really tired of reading all the nonstop what next stories about Fukushima. You can stop and take a breath. Just watch this video that I just told you about. It's all in perspective between the reality of one child's heart disease, Chris Busby's crystal clear explanation of what that means, and what we have all borne witness to here over the last 2.5 years. People are dying in Japan now. Children are dying faster than adults in Japan now. nosebleeds and irregular heartbeats and tumors are happening all over Japan. Now, ENE News has been tweeting, thousands of people are tweeting they can't stop their nosebleeds, they have tumors. Tokyo needs to be abandoned now. Chris Busby said that. Arne Gundersen has come close to saying that while calling Shinzo Abe a lying through his teeth. And TEPCO and the Japanese government are losing control faster by the day now. And yet, at the meantime, Yoshinoya Corporation, that's the beef bowl chain, has announced it will start farming in Fukushima Prefecture to provide less expensive foods for its fast food chain to be sold to Japanese customers. That's happening now. Today, the Japan Times featured a booth at a food exhibit in London where Fukushima produce and vegetables and food was being served to English people with a big sign saying, it's safe. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And to top everything off, Robert Jefferson, my really good friend who was with NHK in Japan, I believe he's listening tonight. If so, it is great to have you in this space. Shared a link via the Asahi Shinbun that the Toshiba Corporation is moving now because nuclear stocks are up to buy a British nuclear power firm for 10 billion yen and run it in England. This is beyond through the looking glass. This is beyond crazy. I've had enough. We've all had enough, and we still stand, and even as cries are rising around the world, for immediate UN and global intervention in Japan. The awareness is catching on, but the madness is endless, and it is not getting any better. We are still all in life and death danger. Now, one more thing before I bring Abby on. It was either in February, and this is part of an open letter and a message to John Trudell of the American Indian Movement. It was either in February or March of 1979 that I had the first of what was to become many contacts with former members of U.S. Army Special Forces. I had resigned in fear for my life from LAPD on November 30th, 1978, just a little over 2 months before. I had gone on record with the L.A. Times, the FBI, the U.S. government, that the CIA was bringing drugs into the U.S. and that LAPD was a part of it. I was laying low then, scared to death, fighting back with my mind and some kind of will that I couldn't control any more than I could wrestle an elephant. Something inside me was moving me, and I'd been wrestled with that for quite a few more years before I got to look the elephant in the face. I was broken in heart and spirit. One day a biker rolled up in front of the house where I was staying on a loud Harley chopper. He was covered with tats. He wore a bandana and aviator shades. He asked for directions to some place, and when I walked over, he pulled out his wallet and showed me a picture of himself in tiger cami. That's tiger camouflage. That was worn by the 5th Special Forces in Vietnam. He carried an M21 sniper rifle, and he said the picture had been taken deep inside Cambodia. He said, quote, and I'll never forget this, "We know what you're doing, and you have no idea what you've bitten off. If you choose to pursue it, you can never get married. You can never have children. They will kill them. You should know this. Somebody should tell you." On February 11th, 1979, right about the same time that this happened to me, John Trudell of the American Indian Movement burned an American flag, and he was so eloquent. He was such a leader. The FBI was scared to death of him. He burned an American flag on the steps of FBI headquarters. 12 hours later, less than, John Trudell's powerful wife and fellow leader, Tina Manning Trudell, their three children and Tina's mother were burned to death on the Pine Ridge Reservation in an arson fire of Trudell's home. Now, I did get married in 1994 at the age of 43. It lasted for 17 months. Although my wife was a sweet woman with a good heart, she was not the leader, the fire, and the light that Tina Trudell was. And I was no threat to anything at the time. I have never had children. And so I say this as a scout. The edge of my scout's knife will never, ever be as sharp as John Trudell's. He became and is an amazing poet, songwriter, one of the best poets I've ever heard. And a man whose heart opened the door for many of us. There will be a second part to this, but I published this letter on my Facebook page this week. It's a short one. An open letter to John Trudell, October 1, 2013. "Uncle, my name is Michael C. Rupert. I have many years who are crying for wisdom, comfort, and love. I have been to many Inipis and one Uipi. My tobacco is in the fire at the Singing Stone Lodge in Crestone, Colorado. The summer I attended Basil Braveheart's Sundance on the Wild Horse Reserve in the Black Hills and danced many support rounds. I offered four pieces of flesh. My first teacher, who I met in 2001, Skip Mayhawk, was a Dakota who refused the Medal of Honor in Vietnam and fought beside Russell Means, Basil Braveheart, and all the brave warriors at Wounded Knee. I have attached his picture. I have given my word to Hanblechia, which is a vision quest for 4 days next spring. I have lived as a warrior in the scout and a scout. I graduated from Venice High and UCLA. John lived for many years in Venice. And I would be honored, John Trudell, if you would be my guest on this radio show, The Lifeboat Hour, some Sunday evening. The world is hungry for the message now. Whoopila, Uncle, I said, that was thank you. And that was a message to John Trudell, and I will have a second part of that when I play my song in the second half of the show. That message is out. Okay, now, you know, I was going to write an intro for Abby Martin, but why? What's the point? Everybody in the world who knows, and I can see already we probably have the largest audience we've ever had on this show. Abby Martin is the host of Russia Today's Breaking the Set. And every time I watch an episode, I go, did she say that? Did she? What? And my jaw drops, and I smile with this huge smile that there is someone out there that brave who will look you in the eye with laser beam lights and just tell it like it is. And I have watched her in interviews with my friend Joe Rogan and with my friend with my friend Ty Ventura, and I'm fascinated by this woman. She rocks us all. She gives us hope. She inspires us. And I'm not going to waste anything else saying, Abby Martin, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you so much for that. And that was really powerful about John Trudell. I didn't realize his story. So thank you for that beautiful introduction.
We are going to hear from John when I play my song later on. He's been through more than anybody I know. And with him, the fires that he has walked through have turned him into something extremely special. Now, we're going to open up a big space. We're going without commercial break tonight. And I sent you an email, and I said I had three kind of warm-up points that I wanted to cover. And what I want to do is just throw those out, Abby, and let you deal with them any way you want to. And then after that, you've selected a really cool song that we're going to hear tonight. We're going to play that. And then I'm just going to kind of stand back, because my sense is that you really have a lot to say. And I really want you to say it. And so does everybody who's listening to this show tonight. So here are the three warm-ups. One is, you know, I thought, you know, I'm really tired of seeing you described with adjectives that absolutely don't come anywhere near describing who you are. Because if I said sexy, intelligent, with a personality, I could be describing the anti-Abby Martin from CNN. Aaron, what's her name? And so those adjectives fall way short, and I have sensed that, and I'm prejudiced by my own spiritual views, that there is a much-needed balance between male and female energies on this planet that is a very spiritual and very important thing right now. That's one thing I'll throw out. Second thing, and this is, and I'm a journalist, man. I've been kicking around here since I started, you know, was writing freelancing in the 1980s. And I've been around the camera both sides. Your show is extremely powerful, but behind every great Abby Martin, there's a what. What kind of support do you have at RT? Your show's just starting its second year. And what's that environment like for you? And the third warm-up part is, and I know you can keep track of all this because you got a steel trap mind, is what kind of impact is your show having? I hope to God you're breaking floors, foundations, and windows throughout the mainstream world. Abby Martin, take it away.
Breaking the set in every sense of the way, Mike. Well, it's an honor because, you know, throughout my whole life doing activism, you were a sense of inspiration to me. So it's really amazing to be on your program and to hear such kind words coming from someone that I look up to a lot. The show is an amazing opportunity. Started off as a citizen journalist doing grassroots activism with my website, Media Roots, podcast with my brother on Media Roots, And starting off with anti-war activism, then getting into media activism, realizing that without a platform to tell your message, you don't have one if no one's telling it for you. So getting into kind of realizing the insane media censorship apparatus that we have in this country run by corporations and the hundreds of vested interests that plague the system that we live in and prevent us from being heard, pretty much. Mm-hmm. and doing a lot of activism with Occupy Oakland and seeing RT out there. RT was one of the only stations. In fact, they were nominated for an Emmy for their coverage of Occupy.
You were in Oakland?
And I saw their presence. And so I linked up with RT there, and I was kind of the liaison for the Occupy Oakland stuff for RT. And then I got offered a position, and I was told that I was going to get a show, but I just couldn't see myself in D.C. because it's such a sterile, bizarre powerhouse of lobbyists and politicians. And I came here for an interview, and I just thought, man, can I really move out here? I mean, it's such a soul-sucking environment, especially coming from, you know, very artistic, very liberal place in the Bay Area. And so I just took the leap. I said, you know, if I don't have this opportunity, if I don't take this opportunity and seize it, then I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. And so I just took the leap. I moved across the country, did a couple months of anchoring to try to, you know, get that whole, like, on TV personality, because I was, like you, I was a lot of behind the camera, a lot of behind the scenes, just editorializing work and writing. So I wasn't really used to writing for television and being in front of the camera. And so that was a huge wake-up call for me. I realized really quickly that it's really hard to be unbiased. I never went to J school and never really had that, you know, that establishment training of how to be this professional journalist. So it kind of became very apparent very quickly that I had a really strong personality that couldn't really be, you know, tamed in terms of, like, interviewing these guests. And so finally, they're just like, all right, I think you're ready for the show. And I had the idea of making it like The Daily Show, but not funny.
Yeah.
Because I think it's kind of a sad commentary that we have these minstrels and jesters, you know, calling out the establishment and doing it under the guise of comedy. And that's kind of the only way that they can get away with it on Comedy Central. And the fact that so many people get their news from these stations. And so I wanted to kind of have a show not only calling out the failures of the corporate media, because that's just one small slice of it. Of course, the failure of the Fourth Estate is one of the biggest problems that I see in this country today. Mm-hmm. Without informed citizenry, you can't really have people making informed decisions about their lives. But on top of that, being able to have a platform, pretty much a completely uncensored platform, to call out corporations, which you won't see pretty much anywhere else. Yeah, I mean, calling out the entire corporatocracy, and on top of that, the U.S. empire, the hegemon that I see in the world, is doing the most damage to global peace and security, hands down. I mean, so having the opportunity to do that on an international platform, it's just an incredible thing. And also just calling out the false left-right paradigm, which I see is a huge, it's a huge problem right now, and it's keeping people divided and, you know, which basically leads us to be conquered pretty easily when we have us fighting each other and not the system. So
is RT a unique petri dish in the world for this kind of show to have come to life?
Yeah, it is. I think it's very unique. I think RT is a force to be reckoned with, and we see a lot of agitation propaganda being manufactured by the political and media establishment against Russia and against RT, because it is a force to be reckoned with, and they know that it's, you know, it's constantly working to undermine U.S. propaganda and conventional wisdom. So they have to kind of counter that in their own way, and they're doing a pretty good job at it, because I get inundated with hundreds of messages every week of people just buying right into that whole narrative, you know, call me a propagandist or whatnot, but it's hard for them to kind of look at the entire corporate media establishment and realize that that is run almost in the same, I mean, it might as well be state-run, because they're parroting the exact same talking points as the political establishment. They're selling the same wars. They're selling the same products.
You
handled
that,
you know, corporatocracy.
You handled that extremely well. I guess it was with Rogan or it was someplace where, you know, I mean, what is the British Broadcasting Corporation? And, you know, CNN is owned by Time Warner. And so you really laid that to rest well. Are you getting good numbers, and are you getting positive feedback? Are you getting some love?
Yes, and that's the problem, I think, with human nature, is that you dwell on the negative stuff a lot more than you do the positive. And I try not to get a big ego, so I kind of, like, dismiss a lot of the positive feedback that I get. But then that one negative one, it just kind of sticks with you. And I think that's the eternal struggle of how to shed yourself of that negativity and, like, rise above all of that, because it really means nothing. I mean, everyone that's attacking you doesn't know you personally, so it's really just them reacting to something that vitriolically reacting to something that you might have impacted or had them confront some sort of preconceived notion that they
grew up with or some sort of bias that you're basically contrasting things, and that pisses people off. So that's a good thing. So, I mean, I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't pissing people off. So I take that almost as a compliment in itself. So I guess it's just the perspective.
You don't seem to be shy about anything. And that's terrific. I mean, that's very, very exciting. And you have touched on femininity and women's issues. And I will speak from my standpoint, following closely Native American spirituality and pagan. I'm an outright pagan. I believe this planet's alive, and she's a woman. God bless her. I love her. We have been living in a male dominated paradigm for at least 5,000+ years now, and I sense that you have also with you, and this may be the difference between you and the anti Abby Martin, Abby Martins of the world, is that you have a sense of power that comes with that. Do you feel that? I mean, am I picking that up right?
Yeah, I think I have a lot of male energy in my life as well, and that's what gives me kind of this. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of like yin and yang going on, and I've seized a lot of male energy. I grew up with an older brother, and so he helped me a lot influence my perspective and kind of kept me in my place growing up. Not my place being a woman, but just kind of, you know, my ego down.
Right.
But yes, I mean, we live in a patriarchal world. We live in a male-dominated society, and doing activism and media activism, anti-war activism, I've always had a problem. I've always found it harder to be listened to, harder to be taken seriously. But I've kind of taken my whole life struggle and used it to make myself empowered. I will never step down, no matter how many times I have been hurt or, you know, accused of this or that, or tried to be put down by a lot of male energy in the world. I use it to seize on, and I use it to make myself stronger. And it is interesting when I touch upon issues like feminism, or, you know, even the clitoris segment that I did the other day, talking about female orgasms and kind of the myth of the, you know, the G-spot and stuff, and kind of the hatred that I got from a lot of the audience of men.
Oh, no.
Because I do have a large male audience, and they were offended. And I think that really shows that we do still have a lot of things that we need to tackle and open the lines of communication about, because even if you feel on the same exact point as surveillance or curbing down the military-industrial complex, there are still some things that are innate within ourselves and our personal relationships that if we don't address, then that does show you a larger symptom of why society is so messed up.
Oh,
if we can't even be comfortable talking about sexuality amongst ourselves.
It is about, and I'm totally part of that. I mean, I am getting to know better and loving the female parts of me, because that is truly where power comes from. And they're, you know, all indigenous teachings say that. I can't wait for a whole horde of Abby Martin clones to show up so I can take a day off. I've been out there doing this for a long time, so, which brings us to a song, and because I know you got a lot of things you want to say, and boy, do we want to hear them. So I asked you to pick a song for tonight, and I was picturing this. Well, this probably the song is called Lunar, and you're going to tell us about it a little bit. But this is what I picture happens when you go home and kick off your jump boots at night and whatever you do, you know, and you want to get there. Tell us about this song called Lunar by the artist Fingerpaint.
You know what, it's a kind of unknown artist, a kind of unknown song, but I love kind of low-key electronic music. I'm really a big fan of IDM, which is, we hear a lot about the genre EDM, electronic dance music, and this is intelligent dance music. My brother's an IDM artist, and so I kind of have always been in tune with that as a form of relaxation and an outlet for my political activism that dominates my life. And so you're right, I listen to this song when I'm kind of walking home, when the sun's setting, and just kind of tune out the stress of the day and get ready for the next one.
All right, let's hear the song Lunar by Fingerpaint. of a great sensual dance song called Lunar. The artist is Fingerpaint. You can find them on YouTube. I wanted to dance throughout the whole thing, but I'm kind of wired to my computer now. Our guest tonight is Abby Martin. Abby Martin, host of Breaking the Set on Russia Today. We've now opened up a little space and gotten to know her a little bit, and I know that she has a great many things she wants to say. Abby, welcome back. We had emailed, and you said that there were a lot of issues that you wanted to talk about, so please tell us what issues are in your gut and in your heart.
Yeah, well, I was dancing to that whole song. Thanks for playing the whole thing. That was great, super chill song, really zen. And I've just realized that I didn't answer your first question about the team that I have. I'm surrounded with an incredible team who I would not be able to do the show without. Manny Rapallo, Cody Snell, and Christine Canetta, just incredible people who share my vision. And it's really a collaborative effort, so I don't want to take the credit too much for the show, you know, being produced every day without giving a shout out to my team. But I think the most pressing thing right now is this self-immolation that just happened on the National Mall mm-hmm. on Friday with virtually zero media coverage at all. Really shocking. It's the day after this woman rams her car into a fence at the White House, and you have the corporate media just sensationalizing the hell out of this story. I mean, they just love to exploit tragedies, you know. And so they're
yes.
So it's just like a frame by frame loop of the corporate media just zeroing in on every single thing about this woman, Maryamne Carey, and who was she, and she was mentally unstable, and this and that. And it's just so interesting to see the corporate media zeroing in and try to psychoanalyze this woman and then completely ignore this man
mm-hmm.
who set himself on fire. I mean, self-immolation is a form of protest that is probably the most revolutionary, most, you know, extraordinary thing that you can do to make a political statement.
Yeah.
And we virtually know nothing about this man, virtually no coverage at all. We have no idea who he was. I know that he was yelling something about voting rights before he did that. And it's just interesting, even the people in this country who, when I pose that question, you know, why are we not seeing any sort of speculation even about who this man was? Why is there no coverage? And people are like, well, isn't he mentally unstable too? And it's like, well, did we call the Tunisia guy who set himself on fire and catapulted the entire Arab Spring unstable?
There
I mean,
was,
is that the frame of reference that we're using now?
There was a report in The Guardian that a camera was set up on a tripod facing him. And that's the only report we've seen. We have seen no mention of who has the tripod. They're saying they have to use DNA to identify the man. I don't believe that. So I am sensing, you know, as a journalist, and as journalists, we have to go with our guts. I mean, Carl Bernstein was clear that everything in journalism is subjective. Deciding what to print and where to print it is subjective. But our guts tell us that there was something deeply profound about this man. Have you heard anything more about any other who he is or any message?
No, not at all. Other than him talking about voting rights before he set himself on fire, we don't know anything about the tripod or even if that was to film him or if that was just coincidentally, you know, happening at the same time. Absolutely nothing. No identity, nothing. And, you know, I think if there was more media pressure, we would know. But unfortunately, this is the kind of story that gets largely tossed to the side, nothing more than a blurb. I remember in 2004, a gentleman set himself on fire as well and self-immolated and wrote this beautiful manifesto about the Iraq War. And it was just this really moving diction of him expressing how he didn't want to be complicit in the system and he didn't want to pay his taxes to murder and create this genocide of Iraqis based on complete lies. And I remember the media just completely overlooking it, saying it was just some crazy guy who set himself on fire. And I just remember being really impacted by that story and thinking, why is it that, you know, the corporate media showed all these Tibetans self-immolating? It was on the cover of Rage Against the Machine. It was this really poignant, really powerful statement that we actually used to respect and pay attention to a lot. And it's kind of just amazing when you see it happening in this country and the way that it's treated here.
I am old enough to remember, I came up in the Vietnam era, Buddhist monks in Saigon and throughout Vietnam immolating themselves and the powerful emotional visceral impact that had on an anti-war movement that was exploding at the time, because there was a true semblance of free press in the country then. So we can assume, I would think, that the powers that be, the corporate powers that be, are afraid of what this man did, what he might have said, and the message he might have carried. Is that your take?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's much easier to overanalyze some woman, who was probably unstable driving her car through the city and then kind of rationalizing the way that she was just executed, obviously, right, by sniper. I mean, so it's much easier to distract us with that than it is to, zero in on this man and his political message.
The sniper is new news. I have been looking. I haven't seen any account or video of the second shooting. There were actually two. The first one, I was on RT talking about, the first one was justified. I've been there, people trying to run me down with cars, and the first one was justified. The question about the how she died, though, rests upon one issue for me as an ex-cop who's been there, who's been shot, who's been in shootings, is that was the vehicle under control? And if the vehicle was neutralized, safe, in park, not in danger of running away, then the question of how and why she was shot becomes a big one. But where'd the sniper thing come from?
Well, the sniper thing comes from people that I know here who had photos of it happening, who work within the Capitol and saw snipers and were taking photos immediately when this was all going down.
Mm.
And just the clean execution, bullet hole to the head, if she was in a moving car, it's just interesting how that could be so cleanly done.
Yeah.
Without it being sniper. I mean, we are in a city where there's snipers all over the place.
Oh,
I mean,
trust me, I was born there. I was telling you in one email that if I ever go there, we have to go to Old Ebbets Bar and Grill and sit in the back bar and get some oysters and shrimp and hang out with all the paratroopers, green beanies, and spooks that are in there. We would mess with some people's appetites if we did that. Okay, what other issues are burning for you? Because you bring such an energy to every segment that you do. What are the most important ones that you think that you'd like to go after now?
Oh, my God, there's so many, Michael. and, it really is, when you say that there's a passion there, and there really is, and it's something that's bigger than myself and my life, and it's something that I just know that I have to do, and it's not fake, and a lot of people think that it, a lot of people tell me they don't like seeing all the emotion and the anger, and can I be more like Democracy Now? And it'd draw on a lot more people. And I'm just like, I don't know how to be any other way, because talking about these things really upsets me, and I can't hide the way that I feel about anything.
Sure.
And I think that right now the state of journalism is so flawed, because we've been conditioned into thinking that journalists need to present some unbiased projection of whatever they see as the truth. And what we've learned is that journalism has been hijacked. I mean, it's such an elite exclusive club, especially in D.C., where you just have this access. And you're basically a stenographer. I mean, you go in and get these press conferences that are all scripted and all vetted, and then you go and relay this information, and it's just almost entirely just as if you were just getting a government press release and just reprinting it with, very slight variation.
Yep.
So I just channel it in an entire different way, and having RT as a platform to allow me to just express myself however I want to, there's so many things plaguing the world right now, and I think the really big issue for me is the way that this entire system is run, which is the corporatocracy. And everything pretty much stems off of that main system. It's why we're in a state of perpetual warfare. I mean, we can dissect the propaganda that initiates and manufactures the consent for this perpetual warfare, or the systematic erosion of the Bill of Rights that we've seen in a post-9/11 world, how we're all boiled frogs, and we've been conditioned into just accepting this. Or the militarization of police that's kind of come as being children of the empire and having all these toys that aren't a use in the battlefield anymore and just in the hands of all these local police forces. And, I mean, all of it is interconnected, and so it's really hard to call out any one of those things, but it's just all – which one would you like to talk about? Throw it out, and I'll go for it.
Yeah, but you fight – one of my favorite guests, you and Graham Hancock are probably the two people I pat myself on the back most about having and enjoying to have on the show. Just incredible conversations. Graham's a hugely successful author around the world. He did a TED Talk earlier this year, which was censored, where he was literally saying that what we are in is a war for the control of human consciousness. And once you open that consciousness, a great many things become possible. So I see you, in a sense, and it's funny you were on with Joe Rogan too. I see you as someone who is in the ring, who is who you strike your blows where you see this man behind the curtain is vulnerable. Where they have exposed, where the beast, I call it the beast of infinite growth, has exposed itself and left an open shot, and you're not hesitant to take those shots.
No fear, Michael. No fear. I mean, seriously, that, like, the biggest problem right now, and I've seen a lot of, there's a lot of different issues. I think the alternative media community in terms of my history and experience in alternative media has been kind of conditioned into another sense of fear where they're scared and terrified of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any difference of being terrified of Muslims and Islam and suicide bombings and terrorism, or being terrified and having your agency completely stripped just because you're terrified of the government or being on a list or being spied on. And so I think that these are two things that we really need to break through. I mean, the biggest issue is basically tackling a worldwide empathy, shedding yourself of these labels and these kind of confined, restrictive paradigms that we look at the world through, these lenses that we're looking at the rest of the world and kind of our comfort zones, and shedding ourselves of all of that and realizing that we are one human family living on one organism. And it doesn't matter if your brother or sister is dying in Iraq because of the militarism that the U.S. has perpetrated on that country for the last 30 years, or someone's dying in your own neighborhood. I mean, there's no difference, especially when you're looking at the fact that our tax dollars are generating all of these policies. It doesn't matter if it's happening in your community or Iraq or Sudan or wherever. We're all one human family.
Aho. That's a perfect setup for my song, which was great. Thank you very much. We didn't rehearse this. But for me, absolutely, Fukushima and climate collapse are the two most obviously immediate issues facing all of us. IPCC has recently come out and acknowledged what is now known, it's a scientific certainty, that the human race is facing extinction by 2030, 2035 as a result. And I've had my good friend Guy McPherson's been on this show four times now, Professor Emeritus from University of Arizona. That is obviously pressing, but with Fukushima, we are facing a human catastrophe that's being now recognized around the world, and it's creeping into mainstream consciousness, that threatens all of humankind with the removal of the fuel rods from Building 4, which must happen soon, in a situation that continues to get worse by the day. These are life-threatening issues. Now, to set up for the second song, and I think I'm wiggling my toes. I really think you're going to like this song. We talked about John Trudell earlier, and he became a poet and a songwriter and artist who has been honored and has been on stage with Jackson Browne, Kris Kristofferson, Dylan. I mean, he has been honored around the world for his amazing skill. But this brings up the subject of the seventh generation, which was mentioned by the war chief Crazy Horse, who was one of the most powerful mystics and a great teacher who carries a very, very powerful message. But this is a song by John Trudell called Crazy Horse, and it asks some very powerful questions. And then when I come back with that, we'll proceed through the rest of the show. But here's a Crazy Horse.
Thank you. crazy horse. We hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the star? How do we sell the air? Crazy horse, we hear what you say. Too many people standing their ground, standing the wrong ground. Predator's face, he possessed a race. Possession, a war that doesn't end. Children of God, feed on children of earth. Days people don't care for people. These days are the hardest. Material fields, material harvest. Decoration on chain that binds. Mirrors gold. The people lose their minds. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. Now and then, dream smokes touch the clouds. On a day when death didn't die, real world time tricks shadows lie. Red, white, perception, deception. Predator tries civilizing us, but the tribes will not go without return. Genetic light from the other side. A song from the heart. Our hearts to give. The wild days, the glory days live. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the stars? How do we sell the air? Crazy horse, we hear what you say. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. We are the seventh generation. We are the seventh generation.
That was John Trudeau. The cut was called Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse was an amazing mystic teacher who saw things so clearly, and he predicted shortly before he was murdered that with the seventh generation after his death, the world of the Wasichu, the white man world of infinite growth, the raping and the pillaging would come to an end. And so I'm here tonight sharing that song, and I would ask you, Uncle John Trudell, if you would come on this show, because we are the seventh generation, Abby Martin and I, and probably 2 billion or more people of us are aware of what is going on in the world, as aware of what the issues are. We are on the right side, and we want to know now what to do, because the time has come, and we ask for guidance, and I hope that that Uncle, you will come on this show and share with us, because we of the seventh generation are doing all that we can, and we want better marching orders, and we want to know, and we want to know what we should do next. I was crying through that, Abby, and I have the strong sense that we are the seventh generation, that we and many like us, because we know that, and you must know that you are reaching millions of people who are not put off at all, but greatly relieved and energized to see you doing what you do. Do you ever have a time, do you ever go through periods where you ask yourself, what am I supposed to do now? What do we do? What?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said before, it's never been an option to do it. And really, we need to start shedding ourselves of fear and really doing it, whatever that is to you. You know, whatever issues resonate to you, it's about pursuing that in whatever mediums you feel most comfortable expressing yourself in. And you know, it's really hard. I was just asked the other day, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I just said, I'm not even living life like that right now. I'm living life day to day, trying to get this information out so we can really try to change the world, because we don't have time. Time is slipping. As you just said, you know, we're facing cataclysmic, horrifying issues right now that it just doesn't seem to be galvanizing or generating the correct amount of attention from the world, especially the world leaders, what to do about it. Here we are still arguing about whether climate change is real. And my whole thing is, it doesn't even matter. It's happening.
Yes, exactly.
If you're arguing whether or not it's man-made, we're far beyond that. Right now, we're trying to deal with the fact that this is happening. What can we do about it? Because Venice is underwater for 100 days out of the year. That should give you some sort of insight on how much the world is being impacted already from climate change. All of the islands out there, I mean, look at all the coastal cities. I mean, these are huge issues that we are going to have to face very, very soon. So we can be arguing about semantics or politics behind these things, but really, I don't understand why the environment has become politicized. I see people like Al Gore, of course, he's trying to make money and deliver Ponzi schemes as a solution to climate change, but I'm talking about the real world community, and the environment and Mother Earth, and loving the place that we are and working symbiotically and harmoniously with nature, because really that's all we have. All of the things that we've built and constructed with concrete and all of these things, it's amazing. It's incredible what we've done. But we can't remove ourselves completely from where we came from.
There is a similarity between the themes of my life and the themes of yours, in that one of my signature lines is that until you change the way money works, you change nothing, which goes to the heart of the corporatocracy, which is infinite growth and which is ultimately the banks and the monetary system. That does seem to have a grip on everything, but I see it giving way, because infinite growth is not possible on a finite planet. So this brings up a question that I had, because one of the things that I enjoy, because I am just utterly free the way I operate. I mean, I can make a decision in 5 minutes and say, I'm going with my gut, with my inspiration on this. When you get a topic for a show, do you have long lead times? Do you have to lock your segments up far in advance? Or can you come in and say, okay, for the segment in 48 hours, here's what we're doing?
Well, since it's a daily show, we really don't have the luxury of really, like, thinking long-term or doing really hard-hitting investigative reports ourselves, although I would love to do that. I'd love to dig through FOIA requests and documents from the government, but unfortunately we don't have time to do that, because we're mostly just re-aggregating things and putting our own spin on it. But yeah, I mean, I try to lock in guests as far in advance as possible and have myself ahead of schedule as much as possible, but it's really hard to do that when things are changing so quickly every day. And you know, living in the 24-hour news cycle, you're never sleeping. You're just constantly like an addiction.
It's horrible.
Also kind of on the flip side, it almost serves as a severe, or it's almost debilitating in terms of like the over-inundation of information and almost that mild depression that comes along with it. But, you know, just try to channel that positively.
Welcome to the club, Junior. That's all I can tell you. I mean, I've been living this way for a long time, and it is so important to balance and take care of oneself. And I should mention, everybody, that I'm going to be a guest on your show on Thursday, right?
Absolutely. I'm so excited.
Well, that'll be is that live when you do it, or is it a tape delay?
We do every Skype interview pre-taped just because there's too much room for error having
sure.
it live and having it drop out or whatever. So we'll do your pre-taped, and then we'll play it live that night.
Wonderful, and I'm sure that the links for that will be turning up, and I'm honored to be with you. But what I'm more excited about, as I do my spider medicine here, I weave these webs. I hook people up like Graham Hancock and you and Guy McPherson and Carolyn Baker and just a whole lot of wonderful people up there, and there's a great spinoff effect of that and a synergy. You are not the sum of your parts. You are greater than the sum of your parts. And when you're delivering a segment on the air, your delivery is so straightforward, direct into the camera. Are you improvising any of that? Is that extemporaneous, or because if it is, man, you're a knockout.
I wish that I could say that it's all extemporaneous, but the interviews are. But in terms of the monologues that I deliver, I write all of those myself beforehand and have them scripted in front of me. Of course, you know, technology isn't infallible, so of course the prompter goes out many times and cameras get screwed up, and so you kind of have to go with the flow. But yeah, I mean, I wish that I could take credit for just having everything memorized and just kind of delivering it, this profound things. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not that good yet. Hopefully someday.
Oh no, I think you're terrific, and you this is like playing tennis. The more you do, the better you get, and you're already knocking them dead. Who has inspired you in your life?
Really, everyone that's putting themselves out there, and it's even hard to hear you talk about me in such a way, because all I've done really is speak the truth as I see it
mm-hmm.
and put myself out there, and I've never seen any other way to be, and I just hope that other people can, you know, I hope that my show is serving that inspiration for people to do that in their own lives, whether it be just in their personal relationships or their communities or on a bigger level. But, I mean, so many people have inspired me. My family has inspired me greatly. My brother, my mom, her just complete support for everything that I've done in my life. And I just think that if I didn't have the support of my family, then I wouldn't have had the platform to really build myself up and pursue my dreams and goals. But on top of that, I mean, all the amazing journalists today, everyone who's really put themselves out there. Michael, you have been a huge inspiration for me. People like Glenn Greenwald,
mm-hmm.
All of the people who just don't comply. I mean, really, who just, they stick out like a sore thumb. And there's really not that many of them that are out there really just hammering it home day after day, because especially in a society where we're seeing this war on whistleblowers, the war on the truth, Obama pulling out the Espionage Act, and everyone just kind of living in fear of each other and of the state and of terrorism. So it is a beautiful thing to see people not buying into that narrative and just asserting themselves and asserting their beliefs, and I think it's amazing. And really, just the people that are doing that serve as a great inspiration for me, and I hope that we can continue to serve as this feedback loop for each other, to inspire each other and to provide that base of support for each other.
Well, you and I,
so we don't give up.
You and I can look at people like Helen Caldicott, who's in her mid to late 70s, who has been doing this nonstop for 4 decades now, and her amazing work. She was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for her work, and I'm glad she. I couldn't handle the cognitive dissonance with Helen Caldicott receiving the same prize awarded to Henry Kissinger and Barack Obama. But there are troopers who have been out here for a long time showing us the way. We are down to the last 2 minutes of the show. Is there anything else you want? Oh, I'm going to use my privilege here. I got a seat. I want to plant in your head. Two stories from the IntelliHub and LiveScience.com. Fracking wastewater has been found to be contaminated with levels of radiation 300 times over normal limits in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country. And apparently, what fracking is doing is actually releasing. Using rocks that Mother Earth has used to store radiation and releasing that. So now we have a radiation issues not just from Fukushima, but also from fracking itself, all of which are being hidden, and these are serious issues. I just throw that out, and maybe you'll do something with that, maybe you won't, I don't know, but that seemed kind of important, and also a good vulnerable spot for the corporations. Last minute of the show, Abby Martin, you are a leader. You are an inspiration to many of us. We are grateful for you. We stand behind you and celebrate your courage, and don't let anybody intimidate you. And, of course, I don't think that's possible. Your DNA won't allow it. last minute of the show, anything else you'd like to say just before we all just send you this huge kiss and a hug?
Well, I wanted to thank everyone for listening and everyone for their support and really just shedding yourself with fear and taking on the world and not trapping yourself into these labels that divide us from each other and trap us mentally into embracing new philosophies, new ideologies, and just really opening that line of communication with everyone around you. Because really, we need to work together from the bottom up if we're going to take back this planet. We have a beautiful opportunity right now to seize life and to make the world a better place, and we're doing it. There's so many beautiful people around the world doing it, being the change, and it's a huge inspiration for me, and let's just keep doing it, and let's take this country back and the planet back, and let's take it on.
Abby Martin, I'm proud to call you sister. I'll stand behind you, around you, anywhere you need. We are together, and I feel stronger for knowing that you're here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, brother.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. That's Tracker of Truth tonight. I'll be back with you next week. Thanks to Abby Martin. It was a great show. I love you guys. Hang in there. We keep doing what we do. Good night.
This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.